So this meditation is labeled Priest of the Cosmos, Sabbath Rest. Sounds pretty groovy, doesn't it? Priest of the Cosmos. Doesn't that sound like something hippie almost? Yeah, I'm going to go with the beads and incense. So I can play Just Ask Alice if you want in the background. Okay, we've mentioned several times and in several different ways that Adam and Eve, by their creation, represent all of created reality, of physical, material reality. And in a certain sense, we are the only thing in material reality that gets to lift up the rest of the cosmos and present it before God and offer it as something kind of on. We are the spokesman, if you want, of material reality before God. God doesn't make anything without a reason. All of it is called to glorify him. And we are, it was all created for us, but we also have, in a certain sense, a duty, kind of a cosmic duty on behalf of the physical universe to present it back to him. Now, it's also true that since we continually mess up, there is a covenant. Since we've messed up in all the covenants that God gave us, and again, I'm getting ahead of the game, but yeah, we already know the story. We know that, okay, you know what? I gave you about 100 different covenants. You kept blowing it. I'm going to come up with a new and everlasting covenant in the figure of Jesus Christ, true God and true man, and he's going to make it all good. And he is ultimately the cosmic priest, so to speak. And in him, it actually makes sense. But his original plan for us, and it, sense doesn't change, he just simply makes it possible through the coming of his son, is that we are called to sanctify creation. We are called to redeem, so to speak, creation, and we are called to represent. Part of how this is done, which we haven't really touched on much, is the Sabbath. Now, when you go back to chapter 2, I don't have it. Actually, I do. I've got it chapter 1 and chapter 2 right there. The very beginning of chapter 2, it says, chapter 1 ended with, creation finishing on the sixth day, and then God kind of resting. And then chapter 2 of Genesis begins with, on the seventh day, God completed the work he had been doing. He rested on the seventh day from the work he had undertaken. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work he had done in creation. So if you think I repeat myself a lot, look at this gospel writer, or this sacred writer. On the seventh day he rested. He rested on the seventh day. God blessed the seventh day and made it holy because he rested on the work. Okay, you get the point. What's going on here? First of all, I never really got this until one time I was listening to Jeff Cavins and his Bible Timeline, and I know Gary knows all of this, but just humor me. Don't be the smart guy. Okay. Jeff Cavins pointed out something that I didn't know before some years ago when I first heard this. When God made creation, he made us, Adam and Eve, and humanity on the sixth day, which is the same day that he made skunks and pigs and other, you know, all of the animals. He made us on the sixth day together with all the other animals. Name an animal, you were made on that day. At least the land animals. The fish and stuff, I guess, got their own day. But you were made on the same day as pigs and you know, other things like that. And what's he saying? Okay, we have a human nature. It's obvious that there is an animal component to us, right? It's an obvious fact. And those of you who buy into evolution, you know, frankly, I do think there is a form of evolution that's totally acceptable, but that's a whole other conversation. It seems evident that we are, for example, related to monkeys and chimps and gorillas and all that, okay? However, there's also something that's totally different about us. And that is the enigma of humanity. We carry this lower animal nature, and we frankly wrestle with it all the time. We have the temptation constantly every day to act on an animal level. Every time we just want to start following our impulses, you know, eat and have sex and sleep whenever we feel like it and whatever. Okay. When it's done, it just on an impulse level, we're obeying our animal nature. It's there. But we also know that we're called to and we're capable of, with the grace of God, something higher. You can put your dog on a diet by simply enforcing, this is what you get to eat. You cannot reason with your dog and say, you know what, Rover? Okay, you're getting pretty fat, so I think you need to cut back. You know, if you've got a dog and there's food and it's available, he's eating it. He doesn't understand the fact that, you know what, I really need to shed a few here. And even if he did, he wouldn't have the willpower to deal with it. Okay? So there's that difference in us. So where was I going with all this? I sometimes even distract myself. okay, Sabbath, yeah. So it's interesting. The chapter 1 of Genesis leaves off with Adam and Eve were made on the same day as all the other animals. And then it says God rested. It's like he was so pleased with everything he made, he rested on the seventh day. So what happens is creation, the sixth day finished, we enter into the seventh day, and it is day to rest. And that is the realm in which Adam and Eve were living. They were living in the seventh day. Now, the seventh day rest for them was living in that intimacy with God. Jeff Cavins said they were made on the sixth day, but they were made for the seventh day. And I think that's a great way to look at it. Okay? That is why God gave us, even physically, a day of the week, which is called a Sabbath. It is so that we can kind of return to that primitive Sabbath that we were called to live in the first place. The original Sabbath is the harmonious, you know, living out of your vocation to holiness. When you live in the will of God, in the mind of God, in the grace of God, there comes with it a natural rest. There is a peace of conscience. There is a natural fulfillment that comes when we live in the intimacy of God's grace. You think of the heart of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Did she suffer? Sure, she suffered. She suffered more than any of us will ever suffer or even be able to understand. And nonetheless, she lived perpetually. There was the peace of conscience. There was that intimacy of God dwelling in her like a tabernacle. And that's one of the paradoxes of the faith. God allows the saints to suffer more than anybody else has ever suffered. And nonetheless, in their depths, there is always the peace of the knowledge of knowing I'm doing God's will. God is with me. I'm in God, so to speak. The actual greatest suffering that he allows the saints to go through, like the dark night of the soul, is when that certainty on a kind of an experiential level gets shaken and they feel like, I'm not pleasing to God. I'm not, you know, I'm abandoned by God. Or, you know, you start to recognize the temptation to start to see your sins in a light where you realize just how many sins and how grave your sinfulness is. And at the same time, you have this desire to please God, and there's this unbearable tension between not being able to be in God's presence with all of your sinfulness and your baggage, and on the other hand, desiring to be in God's presence. And that's their purgatory for the saints who are going through the dark night of the soul. It's really the same purgatory as the souls in purgatory. The stark recognition of the sins that kind of cling to you and that you have become attached to in your life, and the recognition you can't be in the presence of Almighty God carrying all this baggage with you, and nonetheless this burning desire to be with God. So a soul in purgatory is kind of it's being purged because it's tearing its part. It feels like it's getting torn apart existentially. But there is a parenthesis. There is a major difference, though, between the souls in purgatory and the souls in hell, for example. A soul in hell simultaneously feels the desire, the natural desire that it can't handle, that it can't get rid of, the desire for God, knowing that it's meant for God, and a simultaneous choice of rejection of God. The souls in hell choose to reject him, and that very choice is what's tearing them apart and tormenting them eternally. Then from that stem all the other bells and whistles, like, for example, eternal hellfire and the horrible company of everybody else who is hateful, and then the demons there to, you know, add fuel on the fire, and so all the other torments that hell has. But the primary torment is the one that the soul does to itself, the simultaneous desire for and rejection of God. Souls in purgatory desire God, but there's the burden, like I said, of needing to be purified from your sin, and they were willing to do anything it takes to be purified as long as it's going to get them into the presence of God. So the Sabbath is really the enjoyment of this presence of God that we were made for. The Sabbath in its fullest sense, the original Sabbath that Adam and Eve lived in, was that peace that comes from the harmonious, the integration of everything in their being in perfect harmony and union with God and serving him and glorifying him. That is the original Sabbath rest. And that's what we were made for. And that's what we still tend towards. Later on, after the fall, God gave the Jewish people a day of Sabbath, but it's meant to be a reminder. Said, look, you got to work. You're going to sweat it out. I've given you a mission, subdue the earth, multiply, do all these things, but you need, because of your fallen nature especially, you need to set aside specific moments that are just reserved for God. Pope Benedict was, one of the things that he would kind of remind and somewhat chastise the church is, what have we done to our Christian Sabbath, our Sunday? You know, last night at dinner, we were talking about the Bills, the famous Bills game when it was so cold. And I mentioned that meme, and you see the fans, there's these couple of fans, and they're practically buried, you know, just in the snow, and you can tell. It's just screaming. They may as well be Eskimos, you know. And the line says, and you can't go to Mass on Sunday. You can do this, but you can't go to Mass. You can spend hours outside in the worst elements, and you can't go to a heated church for 1 hour. It's too hard. You can pay money to go to all that, and you can't go for free. You might have to kick out $10 or something in the basket, but you know, essentially you can go for free, voluntary donation by going to church and receiving God. What have we done with our Sabbath? If we are called to be that part of creation that's going to sanctify everything, then what have we done with our Sabbath? And as Catholic men, I think this is where we can look at ourselves and say, look, we, you know, let's say 20% of humanity, quote unquote, is Catholic. I assure you the vast majority of that humanity doesn't set foot inside a church with any frequency. A lot of them, it's not their fault. You know, you're Catholic because you're Brazilian, or you're Catholic because you're Filipino, you're Catholic because you're Mexican, or whatever. And some of these nationalities, you know, they're just so many Catholics per priest. You live out in the villages, it just doesn't become part of your lifestyle to go with any frequency. It's not really, you know, a lot of the times so much their fault. Like when I was in the parish in Yonkers and I brought kids, I did 2 summer missions because I wanted the kids to have something that was at least some kind of Regnum Christi style experience and not just only the spirituality that they kind of grew up with. And it's good. I mean, there's a lot of holiness down in the parish, but I wanted to give something that was ours. So I brought kids to DR to do missions because all our kids there were bilingual, basically. Interesting thing was that I didn't know. I always thought gringo just meant like you had to be white to be a gringo. Apparently, in most of the Latino countries, gringo just means you don't speak Spanish. It means you speak English. So we had this one kind of half black girl who looked like she could have been Dominican. She looked more Dominican than a lot of the kids I brought there, but she had no Latino whatsoever. It's just that her one parent was black and one was white, so she kind of came out looking. And they would call her gringo, and I was just cracking up because she was the only girl that didn't speak Spanish out of the whole group, even though she looked more Dominican than almost anybody else in our group. Some of the Dominican descent kids I brought were totally white for whatever reason. They were like 100% European. They looked just like any other gringo. But when I went down to DR, you know, I went to this parish. This poor priest had a parish, reasonable size parish, you know, building and everything. But he had like 45 chapels he had to attend to. 45 chapels. You know, it's, and now granted, a lot of these people, they had means of transportation. If they really wanted to, could they have gone to Sunday Mass? Sure. But the reality is, if you don't grow up and it's part of your life, it's like, it's not entirely your fault, right? But what about us, the guys in this room? We, who do have access, we've got access all over the place. Probably most of us went to Catholic schools. You know, if you live in the city, forget it. You got churches every how many blocks, or even if they're merging some of them still. I mean, there are churches all over the place. And we have the responsibility to be the priests that the world needs, the priests in the broad sense, not like I'm the Catholic, I'm the hierarchical priest, so the ordained priest. But all of us, as Catholic men, we have the responsibility to act as the priests that the world needs, the intercessors, the examples, the witnesses, the ones who are going to work and suffer and pray for the needs of the world. It comes down to us. Even if every Catholic in the world, you know, was more or less practicing their faith, it's still only 1 out of 5. Frankly, if even 20% of the Catholics were really practicing their faith, the world would be 100% Catholic by now. But that's another conversation. We're still outnumbered 4 or 5 to 1. If, you know, imagine. The reality is, percentage of men in the world, taking all religions and everything into consideration, that are really living their Catholic faith, you're looking at maybe 1% of humanity, of men. The world is screaming for us to be the priests. So you have all of these morning meditations and whatever I just said. If you want, you can take it to the chapel. You've got a few texts here. Mark, I'm going to give you the sheet now. You've been behaving yourself, so you get it. Oh, you got it? So who's missing it? Okay. There you go. The guy who most needs it.
I took a picture of it. It's
okay. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I got a hard copy here. You know, we can be generous.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This passage, if you want, can help you. It's Christ talking about the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Okay. But it helps give the context. The Sabbath, our Sunday, was made for us. It's a gift. And like a lot of other gifts, we tend to ignore it. So, but the Sabbath as a day dedicated to the Lord, we need it. It's not that God needs us. We need it if we're going to become real men according to the heart, the way God planned it. So feel free for the remainder of this meditation to kind of meditate on whatever you want after all the stuff I said. Hopefully you'll find something fruitful in there.